An Osho Talk. The Original Man. Talks on Zen, number 3.
Shuitzu said to Chimoku, "Since the Buddhas and patriarchs, there have been three general levels of dealing with people. On the uppermost level, there are no further techniques, no meaning of principle. Verbal understanding is impossible. If you take it up directly at this, then there is no difference from the cypress in the garden, 3 pounds of hemp, swallow the water of the West River in one gulp. On the second level, it is just a matter of bringing out a question, going along to break through. This is like Rinzai questioning Obaku and getting hit 60 times. On the third level, we enter the mud and water, setting down footnotes, blinding people's eyes, destroying the lineage of the Buddha. But a true patch-robed one must search out and investigate the living word, not go for the dead word. Eminent Chimoku, you are pure and true. If you can attain realization at the living word, you can be a teacher of Buddhas and patriarchs. Not begrudging my family way, I have shown you three levels of device."
Ananda, what Shuitzu is saying to Chimoku has tremendous importance for you to understand. For everyone who is on the way, Shuitzu said, since the Buddhas and patriarchs, there have been three general levels of dealing with people. On the uppermost level, there are no further techniques, no meaning of principle, verbal understanding is impossible. That's the best and the most perfect way. A simple transmission between the master and the disciple. Nobody knows about it. Nobody sees about it. It is simply energy moving from one fire to another possibility of fire and making the hidden fire in the possible disciple awaken. This first principle is really the only important principle, but it needs tremendous trust on the part of the disciple, opening of the whole heart, coming as closer to the master as possible, so his flame can reach to your heart and can start another flame within you, can awake you to your Buddhahood. Soetsu is right that in this category, the uppermost category, there are no further techniques. It is not a question of technique. It is a question of love, of trust. Trust is not a technique. Love is not a technique. It is not something that you use, that you do. It is something that happens to you. Suddenly you see the master and your heart start dancing with rejoice, knowing that you have found. There is no doubt in it, no question in it. It is just like falling in love. You can define trust as rising in love, because falling in love is going down. It is biological. Rising in love is going upwards. It is your spiritual principle. No meaning of principle, no teaching. Verbal understanding is impossible. The phenomenon is so great of transmitting the lamp from heart to heart, from being to being, that no word is big enough to contain it, or even to indicate towards it. Nothing is said, but something tremendously important happens. It is spontaneous. The best disciple receives the light without words, just by opening himself, holding nothing back. If you take it up directly at this, then there is no difference from the cypress in the garden, 3 pounds of hemp, swallow the water of the West River in one gulp. These are traditional answers of different masters when they were asked, what is the Buddha? And it is absolutely impossible for people who are not acquainted with the Zen tradition to understand it. If you ask a master, what is the Buddha, he points you to the cypress tree in the garden and says, that is the Buddha. Now, it is so illogical, apparently irrational, or he says, 3 pounds of hemp, that is the Buddha. In this category, any kind of answer is possible, because in this category it is understood that the whole cosmos is the Buddha. So anything belonging to the cosmos, whether it is a cypress tree or a rose bush or a lotus flower, it does not matter. Every stone on the path is nobody else than Buddha. Because Buddha becomes now the very fabric of the whole existence. This second category needs techniques. This second category needs methods and devices. For the simple reason that the disciple is not able to open on his own, the master has to make arrangement, artificial, arbitrary, but because it is helpful, Buddha has defined it, whatever is helpful on the path is right. It does not matter whether it is a lie or a truth. The consequence matters. A house is on fire. Small children inside playing. A great gathering around, shouting to the children to come out, the house is on fire. But they don't listen, they are so involved in their game. And they don't bother, they don't know what does it mean. The house is on the fire, so let it be. They don't see the implication that they will be burned. Then their father comes from his shop, and he sees the crowd, and the crowd gathers around him that somehow save the children. They don't listen at all, they don't look at all. They are so involved in their games, and the fire is almost reaching to the every nook and corner of the house. Soon they will be burnt. The father shouted from a small window which was not yet under fire that, what are you doing? I have brought all the toys you had asked. They all came close to the window. The father said, jump out. All your toys are in my bed. They jumped out, and then he said, you have to forgive me that I had to lie to bring you out. I forgot to bring your toys, but tomorrow certainly I will bring all the toys. And they can see now, he said, that this fire is burning the house. Would have burnt you also. I had to lie. It was not a question of being always truthful. At least a master is allowed to use even a lie as a device. All devices are lies. This second category is important in the sense that it is through the second category most of the Buddhas have realized their essence. The first category is very rare, very unique. It is not in your hands. The second category has made many more Buddhas than the first. Because the second category, the master is trying to help you to drop your defenses. In strange ways, nobody in the world has used devices as Zen. Now, hitting a disciple 60 times, certainly I cannot do it, just because the counting. Who is going to count up to 60? But it must have been great compassion to count up to 60. But why he is beating the disciple? He is not beating the disciple, he is beating his ego and bringing him to his senses, that here personality and ego won't do. And these hits are not received by everybody. These are received by only great disciples with great gratitude. It is certainly because of compassion that the master comes to the point to hit the disciple, because it is so close, just a little push and the whole sky will open up. He had to hit 60 times because the disciple must have been very stubborn. He went on getting hit by hit, but remained closed. And I think the master would not have stopped at 60. At 60, by chance, the disciple must have decided that now it is better to open. Why torture this old man? And he relaxed and opened, and the hitting stopped. The hitting is just a device. It is neutral. It has nothing to do with truth or untruth. And this kind of device is used only for the most prominent disciples. Other disciples feel jealous. They talk about that somebody got 60 hits. So much love. The master will not leave him closed, whatever happens. And there are 1001 devices, and every master creates his own devices. The only question is somehow to throw ice cold water in your eyes so that you open your eyes. You may be angry. You may be annoyed that you are disturbing my morning sleep. But you have asked for it. The day you asked for initiation, you have asked whatever the Master wants to do to bring you closer to yourself. This category is secondary, but as far as the numbers of Buddhas is concerned, this category is more important. More people have become Buddhas because of the second category. On the second level, it is just a matter of bringing out a question, going along to breakthrough. This is like Rinzai questioning Obaku and getting hit 60 times. Western psychology is aware of a certain state of mind they call breakdown. When a person is too much tense that he cannot hold himself together, then it is a breakdown. He goes insane. He cannot keep his personality, his mask anymore. The burden is too much that he is dying under it. He tries hard, but there is no way. The tension goes on growing. The more he tries to control himself, to keep himself in control, the more difficult it becomes. Sooner or later, a breakdown is absolutely inevitable. But Western psychology does not know anything about breakthrough. Breakdown is leading you towards insanity, and breakthrough is leading you to an open transcendental sky. Breakdown is losing your mind, and becoming just vegetable. Breakthrough is also losing your mind, but gaining something far bigger, far greater, a pure consciousness. Breakdown is simply losing your mind. A small consciousness that you had, even that is gone. Now you are just a vegetable. You may be a cabbage, are a cauliflower, because those who know, they say there are two kinds of vegetables, categories, cabbage and cauliflower. Cauliflower is with a college education. Cabbage is just a villager with no education at all. But it does not matter whether the madman is educated or uneducated. Mostly the educated goes mad. The uneducated never understands too many tensions. He never worries about any war. He never worries about nuclear missiles. He is not concerned about all these things. He is a simple man. It is impossible for him to be mad. But the educated man, as he becomes more educated, the more he becomes aware of the tremendous problems that humanity is facing. He is also part, whatever is going to happen, he will be also in it. His tensions increase. Ordinary man will not understand his tensions, because ordinary man's comprehension is not of the problems of tremendous value. Problems as such that they can even destroy the whole life on existence. But break down, whether educated or uneducated, leaves behind just an insane being. Breakthrough is going beyond mind, not below mind. Breakthrough brings you to the open sky of your being. It also leaves the mind behind. But it becomes the master of the mind. The master is awake now, is at home, and the servant who has been there taking care of the home has even forgotten about the master, because it has been thousands of years that the master has not been at home. The servant has become the master, obviously. All the devices of Zen are to wake up the sleeping master. And as the master wakes up, the servant immediately surrenders. The servant immediately becomes a very efficient mechanism. It is a beautiful mechanism, but as a servant only, not as a master. As a master, it is the most dangerous thing. As a master, it will lead you to dreams, fantasies, imaginations, which are never fulfilled. And finally, in your hands, there is nothing but emptiness, utter frustration. The awakening of the master is the breakthrough. Mind is in its place now as a servant. When the master wants, it functions. When the master does not want, it remains silent and quiet. On the third level, we enter the mud and water. Setting down footnotes, blinding people's eyes, destroying the lineage of the Buddha. On the third level is the student. On the second level was the disciple. On the first level was the devotee. The lowest level is to study, to make an effort through words, scriptures, heritage, to understand what is within you. Now it is so foolish. It is as foolish as you stop a man on the road and ask him, please, can you tell me who am I? The man will shrug his shoulders. He will say, if you don't know yourself, how do you suppose me to know? The fact is, I don't know even myself who I am. I am in the same boat, as ignorant as you are. Searching in the scriptures, the answer that will give you the ultimate freedom will make you part of the cosmic whole, will give you the dignity of a Buddha, the awakened, the enlightened. It is absolutely a hindrance. But thousands of people work on the third level because it is the easiest to read the sutras, to cram the holy scriptures. Still you are as ignorant as you were before, just you are now decorated with beautiful words. Your ignorance is now deeper than it was before. Before, your ignorance was not deeper. It was just on the surface, a little hit, and your waking would have happened. But as knowledge becomes thicker and thicker and thicker, more and more layers of knowledge, you are farther and farther away from yourself. On the path, the third category of the student is entering the mud and water, setting down footnotes, blinding people's eyes, destroying the lineage of the Buddha. Buddha's basic contribution to the world is that you are a Buddha. Don't look anywhere else. Don't search anywhere else. Don't go to any holy place. Just go in. But a true patch-robed one must search out and investigate the living world, not go for the dead world. The living world is only possible with a living master. So the real search for truth is 99.9% the search for a living master. 0.1% I am living for the rare for that rare category is the first category, where it happens spontaneously. In the second category, every effort is made to allow the student to open up. In the third category, the student simply becomes more and more knowledgeable. But to be knowledgeable is not to be a knower. To carry loads of scripture will not make a donkey a rabbi or a pope or a Shankaracharya. These are dead worlds where you can find the living world. But a true patch-robed one must search out and investigate the living world, not go for the dead world. The world is living only in the energy field of a master. When you listen to a master, it is not only the word that you listen, by the side of the word also enters the wordless message. The word simply functions as a boat. Hidden in the boat is the real message. It is not the meaning of the word. The word is used only as an arrow. It hits your heart. Don't look for its meaning in the dictionary. Look within your heart whether it has reached deep and touched your being. Living word means to be with a living master. Reduce to its minimum, the search for truth is the search for the master. But it is a difficult search because there are so many teachers pretending to be masters. In the dictionaries, they have become almost synonymous, teacher or master. They are as different as day and night. The teacher only carries the dead word. Once the word may have been a living word, once it may have breath, once it may have had a heart of its own. But once the master is dead and the word becomes a footnote, it loses all life. It is just a photograph. I have told you, once a beautiful woman, an old friend of Picasso, came to see him after a few years, and Picasso was sitting in a room where a big photograph of Picasso was hanging on the wall. The woman looked at the photograph and said, "Very beautiful." Is it your photograph? Because for many years I have not seen you, and you have changed so much. Picasso said, "This picture is certainly not my photograph, because if it was my photograph, it would have kissed you. Just come near, so that I can show you the real Picasso." The dead world cannot create a fire in you. It is the Master's presence that the ordinary world takes an imminent, significant splendor. It suddenly becomes breathing. Imminent Chimoku, you are pure and true. If you can attain realization at the living world, you can be teacher of Buddhas and patriarchs. Not begrudging my family way, I have shown you three levels of device. Chimoku has come to Soetsu to know how to discover oneself. Soetsu belongs to the first category, and it is very rare for the first category people even to talk about any other category. But seeing in Chimoku the possibility that he is so close, that it is better to describe all the categories to him, third-rate quality certainly has to be avoided. You have not to be a student, a scholar. That is a hindrance. Second category is a lower category, but you can become a Buddha. And who cares when you become a Buddha by what ladder you have reached? Once a Buddha, you are a Buddha. The differences are only someone needs a ladder, someone simply jumps. Somebody needs to go step by step, very calculative, thinking himself very, very clever and intelligent. The first category belongs to people who have the lion's heart. They don't calculate. They simply enjoy in taking risks, and there cannot be anything more risky than to be close to a living master. Because he is going to burn you down as you are and bring a totally new being in you, which you were not acquainted, but which was your real soul, your real existence, it is a great risk. Whatever you know about yourself will be burned. And whatever you don't know about yourself will remain only in its purity. Chimokku seems to be a man. He may take the jump and belong to the first category. If not, then at least second category is open for him. These categories are not hierarchical. Remember, it is not that the first category Buddha is higher than the second category Buddha. The difference is only in their jumps. The first is the quantum leap. The second has a ladder. But once you are a Buddha, by what path you have reached does not matter. Buddhahood has no hierarchy. No Buddha is more Buddha than anybody else. Chimokku seems to be a very potential candidate for Buddhahood. That's why Soetsu says to him, not begrudging my family way. He is talking about his family of the lines who have become Buddhas without any devices, or even without a master. I am showing you three levels of device. First, you avoid, absolutely avoid. The lowest one. Second, is good. You can follow a master, trust a master, let him destroy you so that your authentic reality begins flowering. Unless a seed dies in the soil, the plant will never come out, and the roses are far away, miles away. The seed needs to be courageous enough to be destroyed, to be swallowed by the earth. So the second category, you have to find a master. But if you are really in line, as I see you, you can take the jump without finding a master. Because the question is not outside you. You have to find your inner space. No device is needed. But unfortunately, people won't listen. They have to be given something to do. they are so habituated to do that to tell them not to do anything, sitting silently by the ancient pond, a frog jumps in, a little sound and great silence. They will say it is all okay in poetry, but what happened about my Buddhahood? How I am going to get it? It is not a question of getting it, you have it. It is well known fact that sometimes people who use for reading glasses, they become so accustomed that even without the glass, they feel the glass is there. And sometimes, because of this long familiarity, they may be having the glasses and they are looking for their glasses, and if you ask them for what you are looking, and they will say they are looking for their reading glasses, and you have to tell them those reading glasses are sitting on your nose, then they will feel it, because it has become almost a part of their body. For whom you are looking, you are it. A man of deep courage simply looks in and finds it. No need of any scripture, no need of any device, no need of any master. It is very compassionate to find a man like Suetsu, who said to Chimoku the seeker, that my own family way, by family he is referring to all the Buddhas who have become Buddhas without any master, without any device, without any technique, without any scripture. Not bothering about it, seeing the flame is ready in you to burst open, I tell you about these three categories. The student has to be avoided, either be a disciple or be a devotee. Devotee is the highest form as far as reaching to your innermost blossoming. The devotee means a lover, a man who trusts. He is ready to do anything. I am reminded of Bodhidharma, who introduced Zen into China. He sat for 9 years facing the wall in a small temple on the hills. Many people came because his fame has reached all over China. He was at that moment perhaps the greatest living master . Even the emperor had come to receive him. He wanted him to come to the palace, teach to the people, but he does not understand that Bodhidharma's family is not that of teachers. And he had no idea that there are categories of seekers. Some stop at being students. They will have to go through the round of birth and death many more times yet. The second category of the disciple for the emperor is very difficult to touch the feet of the master, to open a little bit, because he cannot think that somebody else is higher than him. Even touching the feet, he knows he is the emperor of the biggest empire. And this poor fellow and Bodhidharma was very strange master. From the very first moment he entered China, who has come to receive him on the border, it is a rare thing that the emperor should come to receive a beggar, and the beggar behaved in such a strange way that the emperor could not swallow it. He could not understand that it is possible. If somebody else was in Bodhidharma's place, the king would have cut his head immediately, because he was behaving so unmannerly. In the first place, he came one shoe on his head and one shoe on his feet. The emperor tried to avoid being a gentleman, well cultured, not to see that shoe. But how long? Again and again his eyes will go to his head. This man I have come to receive, and he seems to be absolutely mad. But he thought it is better not to talk about the soup. It is his business. I should talk about something else. So he asked, because he has created hundreds of temples, made thousands of Buddha statues, has put the whole empire's treasures, 1,000 scholars continuously was translating Buddha's words from Pali into Chinese. And 10,000 Buddhist monks were fed by the imperial treasury. So he has done much to make China Buddhist. Obviously, he thought that he will be appreciated. So he said that, "I have done these things. What do you think, what will be the virtue attained out of all this?" Bodhidharma said, "Virtue? You idiot? Before the whole court, because the court has come with the emperor, there was silence. He said, "You will go directly to hell." The emperor could not understand. He said, "I don't see why you are so angry." He said, "You are destroying a living world and you are feeding these scholars who have nothing to contribute to the consciousness of the people, and still you have the nerve to ask that you are doing great virtue. You will suffer in hell fire." The emperor thought that how to get out of this man's, "I have entered in a lion's den and now it is very difficult to get out." So he asked that if you say this, up to now all the Buddhist monks have been telling to me that my virtues are so much that my paradise is certain. Who are you that you say that I will go to hell?" Bodhidharma said, "I don't know. It is not a question of knowing. I am a man of not knowing." The emperor could not understand. But his eyes were continuously caught by the shoe on his head. Before retiring, he asked, "What is the purpose of one shoe on the head and one shoe on the feet?" He said, "You are the purpose. I wanted to see whether you are a curious child or a mature man. A mature man will not bother where my shoes are. Are you a shoemaker? Why are you concerned with my shoes? It is my head and my shoe." The emperor thought it is impossible. He returned back, and Bodhidharma never entered Chinese boundary. He remained into the hills outside China's boundary. Sitting in a temple, facing the wall for 9 years, declared that to talk to people who don't understand is just like talking to a wall. But talking to a wall, at least one has the consolation that it is a wall. When you are talking to people and you see that they are functioning like a wall, it feels to cut their heads. I will turn my face only when I see somebody who has come worthy of listening the living word. 9 years is a long time. And what a man, he went on sitting, and finally the man came. One morning a man came and he said, "Listen, I think I am the person you are waiting for." As a proof, he cut one of his hand with his sword and threw the hand into the lap of Bodhidharma, and he said, "Turn towards me, otherwise I will cut my head and you will be responsible for it." Bodhidharma turned immediately. He said, "This is enough. This is enough proof that you are as crazy as I want. Sit down. There is no need to cut your head. We have to use it. You are going to be my successor." A man who cuts his hand just to give a proof of his sincere search, and there was no doubt in Bodhidharma's mind that if he does not turn, he will cut his head, and unnecessarily he will be burdened with the responsibility of killing a man. And such a beautiful man, so courageous, and certainly he succeeded him as his successor. But what happened between these two, nobody knows. Not a single word. Just Bodhidharma turned towards him, told him, "Sit down," looked into his eyes, and they both sat down. The snow was falling, and there was immense silence all around. It is known that for 3 years, the successor remained with Bodhidharma, and then Bodhidharma said, "It is time for me to go back to my home." But nothing is known what transpired between these two fellows. They were just sitting silently. First Bodhidharma was sitting alone, looking at the wall. Now they were both sitting, looking at the mountains, at the trees, but in utter silence. Not a single question was asked, and not a single answer was given, but something must have transpired. Unless Bodhidharma would not have chosen him his disciple. the day of his leaving, by that time many more disciples have joined, because now he was not sitting facing towards the wall. He called 4 disciples to stand up so that he can choose his successor. Everybody looked at each other that it is a very dangerous fellow. One never knows what he will do. Still 4 men came out. And he asked the first man, what is the essence of Zen? The man said very clearly that the essence of Zen is to know yourself. Perfectly right as far as any examination is concerned. But not right enough for Bodhidharma. He said, it is good. You have my skin. Just go there and sit down. The second one said, silence. Absolute silence is the essence of Zen. Bodhidharma said, a little better. You have my bones, just sit down there. The third man said, nothingness. Is the essence of Zen. Bodhidharma said, good, but it's still not up to my standard. You have my flesh, just go there and sit down. And he turned to the fourth one, and this was the man with one hand. And he asked him, what is the essence of Zen? That man, with tears in his eyes, fell into the feet of Bodhidharma, did not say anything. And Bodhidharma said to his all the disciples, that this is the man I choose as my successor. Because even to say something is to say something. Even to say nothing is to say something. Just only tears of gratitude. And not a single word, but only a gesture of deep gratitude. This man has my very heart. I am not going without leaving myself behind. In Zen, the best, the very best, happens only spontaneously. A haiku runs, the mouth desires to speak. But the words disappear. the heart desires to associate itself, but the thoughts fade away. He is describing exactly the state of meditation. I will repeat so that you remember what meditation is. The mouth desires to speak, but the words disappear. The heart desires to associate itself, but the thoughts fade away. And when nothing remains, you are. In this very nothingness is your being. Sinso's haiku, does one really have to fret about enlightenment? No matter what road I travel, I am going home. These are the lines who don't care even about enlightenment. He is saying that, does one really have to fret about enlightenment? Talk about it, discuss about it, read about it, listen about it. No matter what road I travel, it may be a long road or a short road, it may take millions of lives or just a single moment, one thing is certain, I am going home. A man of this certainty will reach to his home this very moment. He will become enlightened, but will not bother to talk about it. This type of enlightened person is called Arhata. He has known, but he keeps quiet. He is very secretive. The man who knows and tries to spread the fire is known as Bodhisattva. The Arhata seems to be a little hard. His understanding is, just as I have found my enlightenment, everybody should find their own enlightenment. Why should I interfere into anybody's sleep? He has his point. His understanding is that this goes against compassion. Somebody is sleeping and is snoring and having beautiful dream, and you unnecessarily push and pull the man and wake him and tell him that become enlightened, become awake. All this that you are seeing is only dream. Don't be lost in dreams. But certainly it is a kind of interference. Poking your nose into somebody's affairs. The Arhata has his point, but it looks a little hard. The Bodhisattva has his point. His point is, when I have found, and I know that everybody has it, just a little recognition is needed. If a little push can help, then not to push is cruel. If a little device can help the man to wake from his dreams and his sleep, then not to create that device looks very uncompassionate. But my feeling is, people are unique in their ultimate enlightenment too. I will not say anything against Arhata, because it is his uniqueness. It is his way of seeing things that not to interfere. Interference is taking away the freedom of somebody else. It may be well intentioned, but you are disturbing somebody's sleep. And I will not say anything against the Bodhisattva. He is also right in his own way, that when you know and don't share it, you are very hard-hearted. When you know and you see people are stumbling, falling in their blindness, and just a small effort on your side will open their eyes, it is not compassionate not to do anything. When only a small effort is needed and the fire can spread and thousands of sleeping Buddhas can become awake, suddenly awake after centuries of sleep. Both are right, just both are different. Both are unique. Ananda has asked, Soetsu had three levels of device, but I suspect you have a lot more, that up your abundant sleeve, do we have to wait until we too are pure and true, before you will reveal your devices to us? Ananda, each and every moment I am devoting to you, my work is long ago finished as far as I am concerned. I am living for you. Each moment I am creating devices for you. My hope is to spread the fire around the world, up to now greatest Buddhas have remained confined to very small places, for example Gautam Buddha, the greatest, remained confined to a small state, Bihar, never went out of Bihar. Perhaps I am the only one who is concerned with the whole world, and I would like in every country hundreds of Buddhas. And it is so simple that it can be done. Just a little support from your side, Ananda. It cannot be done against you. It can be done only if you are open, available, waiting for it, then it is going to happen. The transmission of the lamp this time is going to happen to millions of people. Those old Buddhas had a very small company. My company is worldwide. I don't belong to any nation, to any religion, and I don't want you to belong to any nation or to any religion. I want you to belong to the whole universe. And spread the fire. Whatever experience you gain here, I cannot move. I wanted to move around the world, the remaining life, but every country thought that I am the dangerous man, and I will not say that they are wrong. I am the dangerous man, but it does not matter whether I go or not. I can remain here in my room, and those who have the potential of becoming Buddhas will reach to me from every nook and corner of the world and will carry the fire around the world, is spreading it. This time is very ripe time. Either the Buddha is going to win, or the ugly politicians are going to destroy the whole earth, the whole life, the whole contribution of all the poets, painters, sculptors, dancers, mystics. They are ready to destroy any moment. Only one thing can prevent them from destroying the world, and that is spreading meditation, silence, love, joy, dance, making the whole life a celebration, a continuous ongoing festival. That is the meaning of your name, Ananda. It means bliss. And now, from yesterday, your name has gained a new title. For centuries it will be remembered, Ananda, the hot potato Buddha. Swami Bharati Barthi, sitting in Bodhidharma Tea Garden with Swami Beyond Ananda. Hey man, says Barthi, your girlfriend, wow. Every day I see her with a different guy. Really? Replies Beyond Ananda, it can't be true. Come with me, says Barfi, and the two friends go to the smoking temple. There is Beyond Ananda's girlfriend, Ma Mango Milkshake, wrapped around another man. See, says Barfi, are not you going to go over there and primarily encounter that guy to show him what you learned in your group? Well, sighs Beyond Ananda, let us meditate for a few minutes until she grabs someone more skinny. Grandma Swinger goes to see Dr. Gasbag for a medical checkup. Mrs. Swinger, says Gasbag, you are 65 years old. Your health is perfect. But I have one question for you. Your record here shows you as Mrs. Brooks, Mrs. Goldstein, Mrs. Smith, and Mrs. Jones. You have been married 4 times, but I see you are still a virgin. I don't get it. Ah, says Grandma, it is easy. My first husband was a poet, so he only dreamt about it. Then I married a musician, he only played with it. Then I married a weather forecaster, he always missed it. And finally, I married a plumber. I have called him 20 times already, but he never shows up. One night, at the Sacred Penguin Convent, 100 nuns are attending midnight mass. Suddenly, Mother Superior stands up and says, there has been some sins in the church. 99 nuns shriek, ah no, in disbelief. Then one nun giggles, tee hee. We found a rubber. Shouts Mother Superior. 99 nuns shriek, ah no, in shock. Then one nun giggles, tee hee. But cries Mother Superior, there was a hole in the rubber. 99 nuns giggle, tee hee, and then from the corner comes the shriek, ah no. Hornby owns the weird wild animal's pet shop. His store is famous for strange creatures of all kinds, eccentric pets for exotic people. One afternoon, luscious Miss Willing walks in and approaches Harvey. Hello, she says seductively, I am looking here for a pet that will keep me from feeling lonely at night. Well, Harvey splutters, eyeing the woman up and down, I have got just what you want. Follow me. He leads Miss Willing to a black curtain. Throwing it open, he reveals a huge, soft velvet pillow. Sitting in the center of it is a very large and handsome frog named Doodoo. This magnificent frog, says Harvey, will make wild and passionate love to you. Really? Replies Miss Willing, giggling over the frog. I can't believe it. Okay, says Harvey enthusiastically, just undress, lay back on the pillow, and Doodoo will do the rest. The sharp bell rings and Harvey goes out, drawing the curtain behind him. Half an hour later, Harvey goes to check on the amorous couple. He opens the curtain to see Miss Willing is sprawled naked on the pillow, with a disappointed look on her face. What is the matter? Asks Harvey. That frog just sits there and looks at me. She replies, really? Says Harvey, shaking his head in disbelief. He picks up Doodoo and sits the frog on the side of the pillow. Okay, frog, pay attention. Exclaims Harvey, exposing his own machinery. It is the last time I am going to show you how to do this. be silent. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be absolutely frozen. No movement. Gather all your life energy and consciousness deep inwards. Find out the deepest point. The deeper you go within, the closer you are to yourself. At the deepest point, you are the Buddha. Feel it. As deeply possible, it is your own territory. Nobody can enter here. It is absolutely your space, your universe. There is no need to fear. With freedom, open yourself this moment you are the eternal Buddha, the luminous Buddha, the ultimate principle of life and existence. To make it more clear, Nivedana, relax. Just feel the body lying there, the mind lying there, and you are just a watcher. This way you will reach to the deepest and the innermost core of your being. Just be a witness. Remember this space around the day running like an under stream, and your whole life style will start changing. You will be surprised yourself. Things that you are saying, the gestures that you are making are so new, so fresh. You have found the original man. Tibet will know. Come back, but come back with the original man throbbing in your heart. The Buddha is still not a memory but a living experience. Sit down for a few moments just to recollect the experience, to drink it deeply. Be drowned in it. Let it sink into every fiber and cell of your life. There is no other virtue in the world than to be the original man. We call the original man the Buddha because it is dropping the sleeping and waking up. The word Buddha means the awakened one, and everybody is capable. Who can sleep is capable of being awake. Whatever you have done in your sleeping stage has been nothing but dream. You may have been a saint or you may have been a sinner, it does not matter. Once you awake, you are just pure, clean space. Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes.